You're listening to an edited version of the live Voices of Montana statewide radio program. Find us on Facebook and subscribe for further podcasts wherever you get your audio on demand. I'm Tom Schultz, host of the program. Thanks for joining us, and please feel free to contact me at studio@voicesofmontana.com. Let's welcome Representative Derek Skeves. He's represented House District 11 since 2017. Was in office prior to that as well. He's been, I think, fairly described as an ardent conservative, carries those beliefs on his shoulders, chaired the Energy, Telecommunications, and Federal Relations Committee not long ago in this last session, as a matter of fact, and also the Energy and Telecommunications Interim Committee. And this is where, and welcome, Derek. How you doing, sir?
Hey, good morning, Tom. Good morning, Montana. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, thank you for being here. So much appreciated. You chair the ETI, the Energy Telecommunications Interim Committee, ETIC, I guess is what you call it.
Yes, sir. And that's just the one when we're not in session. And that it's a joint meeting between the energy of the House and the energy in the Senate. So
right.
That's basically what that is.
And that's where you kind of started first looking, and you asked these same questions of the PSC that this legislative audit division did, right?
Yeah, what really caused the snafu was what we love to use the word gate on things, but it was the email gate that kind of came out of the PSC and the public release of those emails and the procedure for the release of the – I mean, emails are public. You're definitely entitled to anything you want out of the public, but there's a procedure to get them, and that procedure was not adopted. And so a lot of folks in the legislature were, you know, because the legislature actually has the authority of what the PSC is doing. We created the PSC to do that job, so therefore we have oversight to it. And we noticed there was a bunch of problems in the PSC stemming from that, and it's all pretty much related in personnel and management. And so the last ETIC, we didn't have it as a study bill, but I asked the members of the committee, I said, listen, I think there's a lot of things going wrong with the way the PSC is being run, and I'd like to do a deep dive into it. And we did. That was 2 years ago, and at the end of it, we came up with a best practices basically I wanted to have a white paper for future legislators because energy is so complicated and all of us are weekend warriors, you know, when we go to the legislature. So it's just difficult to get your knowledge set up. And so we did a white paper on the PSC and how it should be run. And we did. It was kind of all during the ETIC, we had updates from the PSC, and many members of the committee wanted to, you know, go after and hammer the PSC folks and try and get us information. But at the time, it was still under investigation. You know what I mean? And so it was all speculation and, you know, titillation. And I wanted to make sure that we had facts before we went after it. And so we really didn't. But this audit definitely shows it. Now, remember, the audit is just pretty much the financial components of it.
Right.
How the businesses run, how they stick to state law. And so it doesn't even cover the components that went wrong and the things that we saw during ETIC.
Yeah, like interpersonal stuff, you're right about that. And it's caused a lot of controversy and grabbed a lot of attention. But the language of this report is also very, I guess the word really is, damning behavior that is deficient or improper when compared with behavior that prudent person would consider reasonable and necessary business practice. Situations indicative of an unhealthy organizational culture. I mean, in full disclosure, Derek Skeves, as I mentioned, representative, previously unsuccessful GOP candidate for the PSC Commission, has announced recently, Derek, you did, that you're going to run again for the Public Service Commission. So just to be clear about that, but I know that you chair the Energy, Telecommunications, and Federal Relations Committee recently. You've been boning up on energy, as you said, it's real complicated. What are some of the solutions to addressing some of the problems that we have seen, or are they just really interpersonal?
Well, excellent question. And first, I've got to say we have two new commissioners. Of course, I think you get two or three every other cycle. And so we have a new chair, Jim Brown, and a new member, Jennifer Fielder. And they kind of took the bull by the horns, immediately jumped on. They worked with the auditors to figure out what was going on. Some of the components in the audit are years and years old. You know, they were in the last audit that was done. And it's almost all procedural. And I think, honestly, I don't think it's I don't think it's malevolent, but I do think that it was just a sloppy management, you know, not turning in receipts, and then at the end of it, trying to get reimbursed for expenses that you had as a commissioner to go out and do stuff. Not a great job by the office management personnel on some components. And so it's mostly managerial. And I think from getting involved with these folks, reading the audit and getting and talking to the auditors, and I think really what it was you have five PSC commissioners, so you technically have five bosses, and the procedure really hasn't been thoroughly thought out of who gets to tell the staff to do what. There really should be a chain of command. There really should be, and of course there's three departments inside the PSC, and each one is you know, basically co-equal, so there is no real boss of the department. And so it had a lot of issues that way. And so they're structural. So that's bad in that we did it. But it's good in that it's an easier fix. And so the new chairman, Jim, is all – I'm sorry, Chairman Brown, he's all over it. And they have – if you read the audit, at the end of each audit, it gives a recommendation. And every single recommendation was strongly agreed upon by the PSC, by the folks in the commission. And they have a really good roadmap on how to fix this. In the past, they had a public relations individual. They've decided to take that FTE and turn it into like an executive director who's in charge of all three departments. So that way you have basically a boss. And then that individual becomes like a conduit between the five elected commissioners and the staff. So if an elected commissioner wants to get the staff to do something, they go to the ED. And the ED then figures out how to make it work with the staff. And then if the staff has issues with one of the commissioners, they go to the ED, and the ED works through the commissioner component for that angle. So I think that's a phenomenal solution. I really – my hat's off to a former Senator Fielder and current Chair Brown, because they've really worked together strongly to create a solution. And I'm pretty excited that I think the solution is really going to work.
That's Representative Derek Skies, House District 11 since 2017. Term limited there, running for the Public Service Commission out of District 5, I believe it is up there. So let me ask this question. Again, it's somewhat subjective, but, you know, in the legislature, you've chaired the committee, as I mentioned, that has a lot of jurisdiction over energy. Has the PSC been doing its job?
Man, that's an excellent question. So if we have to, then let's take a quick step back so that folks understand. So we're talking apples to apples.
Yeah.
The Public Service Commission, its job is to regulate a monopoly. And so as people in Montana know, if you have a monopoly who's providing you either telecom services or in the biggest job of the PSC in the power generation, you know, you can only get power from one guy because they own the lines that get to your house. And so in those situations, if you allow a monopoly free reign, it's a nightmare scenario. They're only ever going to increase price and have no accountability.
Yep.
So government, in its smartness, has created a group that actually regulates. And so what the PSC does, it isn't an advocate for the consumer. That is covered by the Montana Consumer Council. What the PSC does is it justifies what the power company is asking for a rate. The power company can't just charge whatever they want. They have to deliver all the information to the Public Service Commission and say, this is how much it costs for us to generate X amount of energy. And we would like to have a return for our shareholders. And so this is what we'd like to charge our customers is X amount, whatever it is, you know, per kilowatt hour. And then the PSC's job is to investigate that and say, one, is the expenses you've given us correct? Two, is the rate of return that you want to try and receive, is that correct? Or not correct, but, you know, is it enough to keep you in business but not excessive to where you're, you know, making an obscene amount of profit? That's the job of the PSC. And historically, what we've had happen in the PSC in the last 6 years that I've been studying it, there has to be a delicate balance of power between the monopoly and the PSC. They both have to be equal in the dance that they engage in. The energy company is going to do everything it can to benefit itself and its shareholders. And the PSC needs to do everything it can to make sure it's a fair arbiter of that process. And so when it works perfect because both groups are equally powerful. What has failed us in the past is when we elect commissioners who want to turn the PSC into an arm to punish the quote unquote giant monopoly, either because the monopoly is using a power source they don't like, i.e., you know, not the green, right, or you know, maybe there's a personal issue between the monopoly and the individual from the past experience. And we've seen the PSC try to overregulate. Well, now Northwest Energy has been downscaled twice by Moody's, and they're almost an at-risk investment. That's horrible. That's not the job of the PSC to create that kind of scenario. And so what does the monopoly do? Well, of course, they're going to put their foot on the scale election-wise, and they're going to work really hard to get the legislature to weaken and shrink or you know, compromise the ability of the PSC to do its job because it's being so bad at what it's doing. And so what we need to do, and I think this is what the Commissioner Brown and Fielder definitely agree upon since they've gotten in there, and I've been pushing this for the last 2 years, we have to restore the balance between both of these entities. Neither one can be stronger than the other. There has to be a delicate dance in between them. And I that's one of the biggest reasons I wanted to run back in 14. And this is why I'm also trying to run now, is I think with all my experience and knowledge in the energy sector serving Montana, that I can bring that back to the commission and join the current commissioners who have this as a mission objective now, too. And so in an apples to apples situation, that's what we need to do to fix this. We got to get rid of these personality situations. We got to get rid of this animosity or adversarial relationship between the PSC and the monopolies, and let's get back to business for what's good for Montana.
Yeah, because I have some concerns that with these mandates that are coming from Washington, they're coming from Washington State, other liberal states that talking about green, clean energy. I mean, I like us moving there. I don't think that the math adds up, and so I want to make sure we have a good energy supply. It's an absolute necessity. We're back with more here. Continuing this discussion with Representative Derek Skies on Voices of Montana. You know, I got to give out that phone number a little more often. It's 866-627-5483 or 781-627-5483 on the text line. If you want to kind of chime in here, it's energy policy in a lot of ways. We started out talking about this Legislative Audit Division's report on the Public Service Commission. Some changes are in place there. Our guest is Representative Derek Skies, House District 11. I think that's the South Flathead, south of Kalispell. Been there since 2017. Chaired a number of committees in this last session, including the Energy, Telecommunications, and Federal Relations Committee. Derek, again, thanks for being here. I wanted to sort of talk a little bit more about our energy capacity, about looking ahead into the future. As I say, I cautiously discuss the fact that, yes, clean energy is good. We ought to be moving in that direction in a logical step-by-step process. I don't think we are doing that. I think we're trying to take giant leaps, especially with this new administration here, and I'll talk about EVs, electronic vehicles, in a little bit. But, you know, as I talk with folks from Northwestern Energy, I'm always concerned. You know, they're trying to – they've got 60% already a clean portfolio, as they would call it. A lot of that depends on hydro. But they're moving toward that even more. Will we have the capacity? They're short of peak times by – what is it? Almost 600 megawatts during some peak hours. What's the discussion in the energy circles about us running possibly out of energy because we are narrowing our funnel to energy?
Amen. Well said. I agree 100%. The situation, and you could argue all sorts of components, but the situation is Colstrip 1 and 2 are now shut down. That was 600 megawatts of generating capacity that we had being used in our state. Now, there's solar plants and there's some wind farms. They're being brought online. But remember, whatever the boilerplate number is on that wind farm, that's max capacity. And on a wind farm, that's the wind blowing 24/7. And in a solar farm, that's basically the sun always shining, which does not happen, as you well know. And so the you can't look at a solar plant that's got a boilerplate of 250 megawatts and realize, hey, there you go. We just fixed our shortfall. No. Because there's a thing called albedo value, and that's the clouds reflecting back the sun's energy. So, you know, they're not as effective on cloudy days, and they're really not effective at night. And the wind, the turbines only blow only generate energy when the wind is blowing. And so everybody understands, even the environmentalists, that we have to have some form of baseload. Now, you're right. The problem is these other states, specifically the ones on the left coast, they really are being reactionary, and they're tearing those things out and not really developing a strong enough plan to put baseload back in there. And specifically, look at Oregon and Washington. Those guys are crazy enough to actually yank out their dams.
I know.
And so, yeah, it's insane. So it's unfortunate that the policy nationally and in those states is being driven. It's like a reactionary policy. It's not a forward-looking policy at all. And you know as well as I do, I've said it over and over, I am supply agnostic. I don't care where it comes from. It could come from natural gas. It could come from coal. It can come from nuclear. It can come from the wind. It can come from the sun. It can come from the cool procedure on green hydrogen. I don't care where it comes from. I just want to make sure it's not subsidized by the government so that it rises and falls on the whims of the market, and that we generate baseload capacity. We have to generate baseload. And the only way we generate baseload is a power plant that's on 24/7. It's unfortunate there are only a handful of power plant supply types that are like that. Hydro, as long as there's water behind the dam, nuclear power, coal, and natural gas. And so we have to have some form. Now, I have been dealing with the environmental folks in Montana, the MEIC and folks like that, and they understand we have to have a baseload. And then you were talking about Wyoming. Well, they just now signed a deal with the U.S. Department of Energy and PacifiCorp, and they're going to create a natrium reactor down in Wyoming. They don't know exactly where they're going to put it yet. But even they understand it. And the part I thought was extremely telling was the U.S. Secretary of Energy, her name is Jennifer Granholm, and she's totally for it. So that means the Biden administration is for nuclear power, and they're actually using money, the grant money from the infrastructure stuff that's coming out of D.C. And so they understand that we have to have an increase of baseload. Now, the problem is, you look at the market that Montana's in. Okay, so say we're have a shortfall of 200 megawatts at a certain peak load time, say 5:30 p.m. In December 30th, and we have to go to the market. Well, 9 times out of 10, the environment that's causing us to have a higher demand on energy, in other words, it's pretty cold that day, say, it's the same all across our market because we're in pretty much the same latitude on the globe. And so everybody's buying, and boom, we have huge situations where the market value is increasing in leaps and bounds, you know, per megawatt cost. So we can't rely on purchasing because everybody in our market is a net importer of energy. No one is the remaining exporter. And so these are the scenarios we have to deal with in Montana.
And that's why we're very concerned about base load and looking for new ways to generate the electricity. I mean, I like the idea of something pushing us toward innovation. So I'm okay with some of this to a certain degree. But again, it's ought to be a logical process, step by step. I got to take a news break, Derek. I want to come on back and then talk about Montana's potential for nuclear energy. You've gotten into that with House Bill 279. I think it is. And it kind of did away with the Citizens Initiative. There was controversy surrounding that. We'll address that. We come on back with more here from Montana for Montana, the Voices of Montana. You know, just sort of following up here, it was Wyoming Governor Mark Gordon who made this announcement yesterday about a new nuclear power project to be built on the site of one of the state's retired coal power plants. It's called the Natrium Reactor Project. It is in partnership with Bill Gates, his company, Terra Power, but Rocky Mountain Power, the U.S. Department of Energy as well. And, you know, I just have my reservations about Bill Gates. I think he's a globalist and doesn't, But nuclear energy is something that I think we're exploring, I know, in Montana in a serious way. I had Senator Gelthier on to talk about that resolution, a study bill that's moved forward or is moving forward. Now Representative Derek Skies is with us here, a PSC candidate for District 5 and has represented District 11 in the Flathead since 2017. Let's talk a bit about, again, Derek, and thank you for being here. Let's talk about Montana's potential for nuclear power. There was a citizens initiative passed years ago, and I'll have you explain it better than I can, that essentially said that if we're going to have nuclear power in Montana, and this was a constitutional amendment, it'll have to come by the vote of the people. You saw that as an obstacle to our study commission and moving forward. You introduced and passed House Bill 279 that basically did what?
Okay, Tom, I don't mean to correct you.
You
but
please
it's,
do.
House Bill 273 repeal of, and the original initiative was I-190, and it was passed in 1978. It was a reaction to the uranium and plutonium reactors we were seeing across the world. Of course, Chernobyl happened after that, but Three Mile Island was around that time frame. And then modern days, we have the Fukushima incident. And that's all uranium and plutonium reactors. And that's not what House Bill 273. And then the other one was Senate Joint 3 by Gauthier. The cool thing about that, and that one made it, it's actually now going to be in ETIC. So ETIC is their first meeting, I think, is the 13th. And I'm definitely on the docket to talk to those guys. So I'm excited about the study of how to integrate power. And if you remember, there were basically three components to the study bill. One was evaluate regulations that need revision in order to enable the construction of the nuclear power. Basically, the economic feasibility of replacing those coal-fired boilers with those advanced nuclear reactors. One of the biggest reasons to do that is utilize the space, utilize the employees, but the giant KVW, the huge power lines that transmit that massive generation is all right there, so it's awesome. And then last is evaluate the safety waste stream resulting from nuclear power plants and how we can incorporate that in Montana. So that's SJ3. It's in ETIC, so I know they're going to do a great job looking at it because Senator Gauthier is on there, so is Senator Ankeny, and the new chair of energy, I believe, next cycle, the young Ms. Zolnikoff. And so excellent stuff there. Now, what I did, if you notice what happens, the original I-190, you basically go through the entire permit process to build a nuclear power plant. You got to get it sited. You got to get it engineered. You got to get the environmental impact. You go through all of that. And at the very end, you submit it to the voters on a ballot initiative. And you ask the voters, do you want a nuclear power plant or not? And so what has happened is nobody is going to go through that expense and allow somebody to just spend a small amount of money, say $100,000, to tell everybody in Montana, oh, no, we don't want nuclear power. It burns up too much water. It's got a huge waste component. We got to go bury in the ground. It can melt down and irradiate and destroy all of Montana.
All right, stand by.
A little bit of money.
Stand by. I mean, there's too much of the story to finish. I got a breakup coming, and we'll do that on the other side here. Derek Skies, representative with us here and a PSC Public Service Commission candidate. That election's a few years off, but we're back here with more Voices in just a little bit.
Voices of Montana continues right after this.
You're listening to a podcast from the live Voices of Montana radio show. Be sure to check out the full podcast page at voicesofmontana.com for a full listing of all our programs. We've been covering Montana issues for more than 20 years. Thanks for listening today. Tom Schultz back alongside. It is from Montana for Montana Voices of Montana. Back with Representative Derek Skies, PSC candidate as well for District 5. That's election is a couple of years off. I'm enjoying the conversation here, Derek. I want to get to this again. House Bill 273 is what it is, right? You introduced it, passed it. Governor signed it, would repeal the nuclear vote initiative as you said, would ensure that the people have a say in this. Now, your bill has been criticized for legislative intervention in a citizens initiative. And from time to time, we see that citizens initiatives. And maybe I'm just getting on a podium here, but I have favored them in the past. I worry about them now because I think they are easily manipulated. What's the approach? What's the legislative approach to intervening in a citizens initiative? I assume you have to do it very cautiously.
Yes, sir. And excellent point. And you're exactly right. The citizens of Montana definitely have the right to the initiative. It's in the Constitution. First off, me changing this, it was not a constitutional referendum. It was just a law. So it only took a simple majority. A constitutional amendment has to have 2/3 of the chambers. And so this was just a regular referendum. It wasn't a constitutional one. And then second, what started this all out was back in 2011, there was another bill that was brought by Representative Joanne Blyton, and it was basically to clarify ballot language. that a yes had to be a yes and a no had to be a no. And I know that's a no-brainer, and my daughter would have said, duh. But so in that testimony, there was a young lady who was involved with the nuclear power band, which, by the way, was two generations ago. I mean, literally almost 50 years ago. And so she said that they had money left over after the initiative, and they did an exit poll to ask people, you know, why did they vote for it? And she said in testimony, I have the audio file and a transcript, that a majority of the folks that voted for that original initiative didn't understand what they were voting for, didn't know if the yes was a yes or a no was a no. And so those variables stack up to convince me that, one, it's two generations ago. Today has a whole bunch of new Montanans in it that have a voice in this. Two, it is based on technology that's ancient. We're not using the technology in this new language. And three, Montana is not a direct democracy. And to argue that I'm trying to cut out the public's involvement is patently false. Think about it. If I have to put it on the initiative to get a power plant put in, then it's going to be in the media. The zoo of the media is the ones who are going to debate if this is good or bad. I would rather have the debate in the legislature where it's structured. You have proponents and opponents. It's got to go through two chambers. You're going to have multiple hearings and multiple discussions on all the benefits and flaws. That's the real deliberative process that is actually eliminated by the referendum. And so all those things got together to convince me in my mind that I'm not stepping on Montana. I'm allowing this current generation to have a voice. And so, you know, and right now, Senate Joint 3, now when I brought the bill, the argument that Ms. Mackin and her group have is that I repealed the language, some of the language relating to nuclear power. And that is true because being a four-term veteran, I understand that bills can be hijacked. And so all I did was a direct repeal of that act. And everything affiliated with the act is gone. That way you couldn't change the title of my bill or do any shenanigans. My bill had a rise and fall just on that repeal. Now, I also knew at the exact same time that Senator Gauthier is running Senate Joint 3, which is, hey, let's define what it is to be nuclear power in Montana in today's generation. And I'm quite positive they could come out with, hey, plutonium uranium should not be built in Montana. I'm 100% behind that. Those two types of reactors should not be in Montana. But thorium, heck yeah, man. Thorium is a phenomenal resource. Montana has it in the ground so we could even mine it as well. It doesn't take any water. And so the referendum process has been designed with the media feed frenzy that would go on to allow never will there be nuclear power in Montana. Whereas with my bill and what we've done, it'll be deliberative, it'll be discussed, it'll be exhaustively beat up and detailed, and it will benefit Montana in the long run much better than the original process, which is why I decided we should remove it.
Understood. And I appreciate that. Current generation to have a voice, because that was a long time ago, as you talked about, and the scenario had changed. One of our listeners in Great Falls and KQDI had come on the air and talked about and alerted me to thorium. So I looked into that, and it is a much cleaner technology. How about the fact that Wyoming and Pacific Core, which is involved in Montana's energy infrastructure as well, being a part of that project in Wyoming, moving forward with it, we haven't had a nuclear plant built for 20 years. That's always the go-to. We haven't done a lot of things when it comes to our energy infrastructure for at least that long, and it takes that long to get something done. Studying it in Montana, small module nuclear reactors, nobody's going to say it's safe, but it can. There's an element, I should say, that needs to be regulated for public safety. But it's a lot safer than things had been in the past. Technology has improved in that regard. So Wyoming moving forward on that, using their existing coal power plants and that infrastructure in place, opens the door for Montana, do you think?
Oh, totally. And also, remember, Rocky Mountain Power is the division of Pacific Corp that is doing this. Rocky Mountain Power is also a part owner in Colstrip.
Yep.
So, yeah, it would be a simple thing for us to use the grant money that the federal government's putting out to do exactly what's in Senate Joint 3 that ETIC is discussing, and let's get the same thing. Now, remember, there's an atomic lab or a national lab on nuclear research in Idaho, and they're doing one over there as well. I don't think it's neutronium. I think it's the thorium. And so our sister states are embracing this technology. They see the market that we're all in. Everybody is a net consumer. Nobody is a net exporter. And if we're not careful, Idaho and Wyoming are going to be the only guys that generate energy, and then they dictate the price. Now Montana, remember, if we have some nuclear power and we're generating a baseload and we can supply Montana with all the energy we need, remember, look at the number of homes that have been sold. I think the Flathead is, 16 or 18,000 new residents in the last 12 months. And it's Gallatin has a similar problem. You've got a ton more people moving to Montana using the remote ability to work wherever they left. All these folks want to turn a light switch on and have the light come on in the room. That's not going to continue to be an easy thing for us unless we develop this baseload. And so if it's generating power, we generate a tax on its generation. We get a tax on its transmission. The more revenue we can get out of the generation of our own power guarantees our citizens access to that power, gives us a tax base that we can now start to release the burden that we're putting on Montana property taxpayers. I mean, there's a win-win-win scenario, and SJ3 is going to figure out exactly what we do with the negative components of nuclear power. How much thorium's left over after we do it? How do we dispose of the thorium? Where do we put the reactor in relation to water sources and water tables? All of that stuff is going to be discussed in ETIC, and I'm excited they're going to probably set up a series of laws that they'll then pass in the next cycle. It's sad because Ms. Mackin thinks that we're going to go out and build a nuclear power plant tomorrow. That'd be awesome, but there's no way. We don't have the code. We don't have the rules. We have nothing really set up. Nobody is going to invest in that until we set that up. And so, and if you read her language for her, she wants to put another initiative on the ballot to repeal what I've said.
Yeah, let's clarify this, because you've mentioned Ms. Mackin a couple of times. That is a listener of ours as well, and I've communicated with her. But that she is somebody who is part of, and I don't have it in front of me. My internet's been
called the People's Power League.
People's Power League, right? And that's been around for a long time. But they have, I think, officially applied to the Secretary of State for a referendum to appeal 273. Is that the case?
Yes, sir. And I don't normally use citizens' names because I think there's a right to privacy. But Ms. Mackin is an activist. She is the secretary, or I should say the treasurer, so her name is on everything they do. And she's basically a lobbyist for this perspective and has been in front of us testifying, so I don't have a problem using her name. If you read her referendum request, which was filed just last week, it says vote yes to reinstate the power of Montana voters to approve or reject any proposed major nuclear power facility, comma, and retain nuclear safety and liability standards. That right there shows you that the fear that I have is she's putting her foot on the scale and telling – if you read that and you don't know what's going on in Montana, you're going to think, oh, my gosh, those evil guys, they took out all the liability standards, and we need to put that back in there. That's not the case at all. That is what we're doing in Senate Joint 3. That'll be in there before the beginning of the next cycle. Ms. Mackin knows this because she heard the testimony. And so why not wait a year, see what we develop out of this study, and then embrace those changes? If she really wants to have an impact, she should be testifying in front of ETIC and demanding that they do these liability standards and these safety standards, make sure that they're included in the next series of legislation, rather than, again, trying to go back to the narrative of nuclear power is bad, you know, and she's unfortunately, I think, stuck on the fact that uranium and plutonium, and yes, those are not good sources, I don't think, and she's interpreting that into these other small-scale nuclear power plants.
Thank you. Appreciate that. And Ms. Mackin as well, you're welcome to come on and respond to this. In fact, I would love to have you come on because I think it's something that we need to discuss and move forward with. If we're going to be looking at nuclear power, if we're going to do away with coal, at least for our energy resources, for that base load, a reliable base load is just not something we can live without. And like you said, everybody here in this region is a net importer of energy. And so when energy gets scarce, we're all vying for the same scarce power, and which it shoots the cost up. And so it's something I think that we can logically take steps toward. I like the idea of this study, Bill. Let's find out what's in there. Stand by. I got to take a break. We are from Montana for Montana. 866-627-5483 or 781-627-5483. Walking it out here. Back with more in just a bit. Clean, reliable, affordable. That's what we're looking for in our energy sector. Tom Schultz back here on Voices of Montana with Representative Derek Skiers here about energy. I want to move on here. As we only have about 3 minutes, Derek. I want to talk a little bit about batteries, about electronic vehicles, because the Biden administration is making a huge push toward this. They want to have, you know, our entire U.S. 270 million vehicles electrified by 2030. That's really not going to happen. Making things happen quickly is not what the government does very well. EVs are going to severely limit mobility. But you and I had a little chat offline yesterday, and we were talking about batteries, and the technology has come a long ways. I mean, it used to be our range was 100 miles in these EVs, and now it's up to 350 miles. So, I mean, they're making progress.
Oh, yeah. I think for the EV industry to really kick off, at least in Montana and the Northern Hemispheres, is twofold. One, I need a three-quarter ton truck that's got some serious torque power.
Right. Yeah.
Give me that and a battery that I'll buy.
Yeah.
And then second, these batteries have got to get better in the cold, because the colder it gets, the worse these batteries work. And that's a scenario everybody understands happens in Montana for about 6 months.
And that's on a small scale, but on a large scale, battery power is becoming more and more consistent. I wouldn't call it base load, but in covering the gaps.
Yeah, I agree. And the technology is really cool. And it's a need in the market. So they're going to get better and better and better at it. And the way that batteries have been used so far has been as a stopgap maneuver. And so originally I thought that batteries would be paired to a solar farm or paired to a wind farm, and it would make that boilerplate number actually real. So the wind's going to generate 250 megawatts 24/7 because we use batteries. So when the wind doesn't blow, batteries then provide it. I thought that's how batteries were going to be done. But if you look at how batteries are actually being worked, is, you know, God bless capitalism. I'm gonna store stuff in the battery, my power in the battery, when the market is the cheapest. And so my price per kilowatt's the lowest. I immediately buy that up, put it in my battery. Then I'm gonna hold onto that battery until I realize a percentage income on its sale. So say it costs me $1 to charge the battery, and I wait until it's $2, and I just made $1 on every dollar I invested. That's how batteries are being used. Mm. And in the market today, you have a thing called a five-minute market. You can actually track what it costs every 5 minutes. And so batteries, they're being used as a way to stop gap the demand curve. You know what I mean? I need a bunch of power at 4:30 p.m. because everyone's coming home and turning on their TVs and stuff. And it's helping us get past that point. But it's really kind of amazing how it's being used more as a market force to generate money for the folks that own the batteries.
Interesting. I did not know that. I can see that. I get that. Derek, we'll catch up again. Always talking energy, and always appreciate chatting with you. Got a text message here that said, I really enjoy listening to Derek. He cuts to the chase and explains complex ideas in an understandable fashion. Keep up the good work. That's for you, sir. Thanks for being here. Hey, take care, okay?
Thank you, sir. Thank you to your listeners.